show today. It's February 23rd, 2017, and this is Radio Free Nintendo. Switch will be out in a week, so we're going to talk about video games, I guess. I'm your host, James Jones. With me today is John Lindemann.
Hello, James. Good to be back.
Hello, John. You weren't gone.
I mean, I have been absent from people's lives for a week. It's good to be back on the show. I mean, if you want me to clarify things a little bit more in the future, then I can do so.
We're all the better for it. Also joined today, hello, Guillaume Vaillette.
John just went and ruined my joke because I was going to pretend like I was going to say, hey, I'm back after a week's absence because I spoke so little last week. I had this whole bit set up and just John just ruined it. So
yeah,
thanks
John can always do that, couldn't he? That's the thing, I mean.
No bits get ruined when John Lindemann's around because no bits happen.
Nope.
I may have gone a little loud on that one. And I'm also joined today by Mr. Greg Leahy, who that wasn't a segue of any kind. Hi, Greg.
Sure. Ahoy, hoy, everyone.
How so perfunctory. God. It's like you're obligatory. Don't kill yourself, Greg.
It's basically like, I might have been loud on this one and this twat might have been as well. That's basically what it was. I mean, did you want me to say that?
I realized I talked myself into a corner when, it's no the Big Ape situation, but it wasn't great. God bless the Big Ape. That's all I can say. I mean, we all need a little Big Ape in our lives. I don't know where I'm going with this. This is a podcast.
What are we doing here?
We're going to talk about video games for the next roughly 2 hours, and you're going to like it. Or not. It just is what it is. And we're going to start off with new business, which is where we talk about allegedly new video games. And I have Tank Troopers on 3DS. Tank Troopers is it's a tank game on 3DS that Nintendo published. I'm trying to remember who developed it.
Is it Vita, the people who were involved in the Steel Diver games? Is it Giles Goddard of Star Fox fame is involved with, I believe?
Yeah, that checks out from playing this game. So basically, it's kind of your, if you go all the way back to the Atari tank game, like the old vector art.
Battlezone?
Yeah. If you go back, it's basically Battlezone gameplay, so you control a tank, you can move, turn, and advance, and reverse, and shoot, and you can turn it into turret mode. There's some advancements, you can lock your momentum in one direction or another, and then just control the turret. Motion controls or circle pad controls for the turret. You cannot turn off the motion controls, so a little bit, like, no, you will use them. But it seems like it's meant to be used in conjunction with the circle pad. But what makes this game unique from Battlezone is A, it's not vector art, it's cartoonish graphics. B, there's a lot of objectives and stuff to it, so it's not just like kill all enemy tanks. And C, you have the titular tank troopers, which are these crazy characters whom you can assign to your tank before the battle, who give it powers. And they're on a recharge meter, so you may have a character who gives you the ability to essentially be invisible until you use up all of their meter. Or a character who has really powerful shots. Again, maybe you get 3 shots before their meter's gone, they have to recharge. To stuff that's more like Mario Kart-ish, where a character who, when you shoot them, it basically squid inks the screen so they can't see, or it reverses their controls, or locks them in the forward direction, stuff like that. And some of them are less combat driven, so are more like you could become invisible temporarily, or you can move faster, you reload faster, stuff like that. You can assign some number of them to your tank. It depends on what tank you are operating. And you cannot stack powers, so you have to pick one. You can put one away and bring out another one, and then their meter starts to recharge when they're not out. If what I have described to you sounds like really a perfunctory description of a game, guess what? It's a really perfunctory game of a game. It just doesn't feel like there's much to it. I dare say this tank game is rather treadbare. And on that, we're going to end the show. Thanks, everybody.
Wow.
You can tune in next week when we're talking about Princess Tomato and the Salad Kingdom. But realistically, this game is built around its multiplayer mode. The single player is essentially these really kind of basic missions that are really just designed to get you opportunities to do stuff with the multiplayer. It's like collect coins on the battlefield, destroy these stationary targets, hunt down all the tanks, hunt down all the turrets, get from point A to point B while you're being harassed before time runs out, stuff like that. You know, nothing earth-shattering. It's a lot of just basic combat or, you know, finding stuff or getting from A to B. It's not going to change the world in terms of tank games. The problem, such as it is that it's kind of boring. Tanks are generally pretty slow. They reload kind of slow. They're not... Some are obviously faster than others, and it's not like it plays poorly. It's successful at what it's attempting to do and does nothing else beyond that. These are great missions for a multiplayer-focused game. If this game was a really strong multiplayer game, these would be the kinds of things that you would expect to see in them. Sort of like the single player in Splatoon, but not that good. Not that well developed. But the same kind of ideas where, like, hey, this stage is around showing you how to do something. And there's quite a few of them. The problem, such as it is that this game is multiplayer, locally. And that means, essentially, there's not going to be a lot of opportunities to play this game with other people. If it was online, maybe you could go online and wait in a lobby for a game to form. It probably wouldn't. But at least there'd be a chance. This has download play, so you can at least play it with somebody else without... the game, but of course you're locked into the same tank and same character, so you can't have multiple types of tanks rolling around and different stuff happening in the game. I think it's up to 4-player. It's just... I mean, this sounds really dismissive, but the game's just not very much fun. You know, it plays okay. The combat lacks any kind of oomph to it. Like, when you hit a tank, you want it to feel like I just hit a tank with a cannon. It just kind of... It's rather flaccid in that respect. Like, you don't feel like you're hitting with power. You don't feel like you're operating a big, brash tank. You feel kind of like you're driving... It feels like you're playing a bad Mario Kart battle mode. I almost wanted to equate it to Super Bombad Racing for the PlayStation 2, if that's a reference anybody wants to go pull out. Because, like, the heads of the troopers pop up out of your little cart-shaped tank and sort of gesticulate around while they're in play, and then they go back in. It's just not very good. Like, I'm sure there are people who probably think this game is great. I don't know what the appeal of it is. I mean, yeah, you can buy stuff to modify your tank, but it costs a tremendous amount of money, and you don't earn money super fast. Granted, I haven't spent a ton of time with it, about 2 hours. But nothing is jumping out of me right now is particularly appealing.
So are you saying, are you saying tanks but no tanks?
That's almost worse than mine.
Yeah, still, you invited it, didn't you?
I did.
You made your bed.
You know, there are a lot of single player missions, so maybe it gets better as I go. Interestingly enough, the Talk Nintendo podcast itself published a review on NWR and gave it an 8. So I don't know what I'm missing here. I don't know. Maybe I'm missing something. Maybe if I spend some more time with it.
And especially playing it with others. Like, if people are buying it and then go to PAX and find people to play with, like they might. Or if, you know, some people actually go to meetups or you know, have people in their lives who play games still, you know. So it might be... they might be able to get so much more out of it, you know.
I just don't find that the gameplay is particularly appealing either. Like, it works, and that's kind of the best I can say about it. So, you know, maybe I could get somebody else to play it with me, but the question is that really the best use of time I have with somebody else who has a 3DS? I mean, I don't want to be that kind of dismissive, but it just... doesn't feel great. And again, I could be, maybe if I keep playing, it'll open up and I'll see more stuff I like. I like that the tanks feel different, like very different, and that they have different capabilities, but in the end, I'm just not having much fun with it. So, it is what it is, I suppose. Maybe I'll play some more and maybe my opinion will change, and if it does, I'll call it out on the show, but for now, Tank Troopers is kind of Tank Droopers.
Kind of a bomb.
Kind of a, oh.
Yes.
There we go. Yes. John saved it. I ruined it. I'm not sure which. John killed Greg.
All right, James. Speaking of unenjoyable.
Yeah, thank you for doing the transition.
I see.
Speaking of unenjoyable, here's John's segment.
John just keeps proving why he's the rightful host of this show. The segues like that.
Greg,
speaking of unenjoyable, here's the next 10 minutes of our audience's life.
The king in exile.
Your ongoing endorsement, Greg. Warms my heart. All right, so...
I listened to the episode where you forgot to give out the email. Thank you. It's RFN at tenderworldreport.com.
So, I had a
run-in... Continue, John.
I had a run-in with the virtual console, which will be noticeably absent at the Switch launch, which we found out this week, I guess. I always thought... I never really assumed it was going to be there. They were always very flaky on whether
they
or not it was going to be
they
there.
Just hard confirmed... They just hard confirmed what will be there at launch.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah. So I had the joy of dealing with. I don't know what you could call this. Sort of like a reverse fridge cleaning. I don't even know what you would call it at this point. But
a fridge stuffing, grocery shopping,
a little bit.
Grocery
yeah.
shopping.
Maybe a fridge refresh. But so what I had to do this week was I found out. Well, this all started. I had a yearning to play a shoot 'em up. So I wanted to play Lords of Thunder. Unsurprisingly. Lords of Thunder was located on my SD card.
Excuse me, you wanted to play what?
Lords of Thunder. Yeah, exactly. So, I go onto my SD card, and I go to launch it, and I get, I wouldn't even call it an error message, it was just a message saying that this content cannot be launched on this Wii console. That's all it said. Mm-hmm. So I was like, alright,
so
how is this?
Pause real quick.
Yeah.
Did you download it onto that SD card from your original Wii?
No, but I didn't know that would be a problem. I had no idea. But it turns out that every single pre-existing game on that SD card did not launch on that Wii. Well, which is, I don't know. See, I don't know what they consider new hardware. Whether that's pointing at the Wii U hardware or whether that Wii on the Wii U is actually some sort of is. I don't know if that's a VM or what. Like, I don't know.
More or less, yeah.
So, I guess it's the virtualized Wii hardware that is considered the new hardware.
Right. But when you downloaded to that SD card, that was on an actual Wii, correct?
Correct, yes. That was on my Wii, which has long been sold off because I no longer needed it.
Okay. All right,
so,
gotcha.
Yes. So, these are all pre-existing games that I had already downloaded on a previous Wii. And those are not compatible. They will not launch on your Wii U. They're no part of the transfer process. They are just completely off on their own. And you can't launch any of them. But it confused me at first because I just did the download for, you know, our retroactive title, Princess Tomato, which worked just fine launching off the SD card. There was no issue there. And the stuff that I actually had on the Wii itself, the Wii instance, I guess you could call it, those all launched just fine. So it was just the games, just the pre-existing games on this SD card. And so come to find out, of course, all of these VC games, they're all tied to the hardware that they originally were downloaded on. So what I had to
Would it let you move them to the Wii?
You know,
Did
I don't...
Did you 3G import them?
I don't know if that would have worked or not. Maybe it would have. I didn't really have any room. But so, yeah, so what I had to do is I had to go through and I had to delete all of them one by one. Of course, I couldn't find a way to actually bulk delete all of these games.
You just put the SD. So the way you would do that is you put the SD card on your PC and just kill them.
Yeah, yeah, I should have done that. I knew there would be a quicker way, but I'm just like
you might have lost your saves if you had backed up your saves on your card.
The saves actually are on separately on the Wii. I thought the same thing. I assumed the worst. I was like,
so
everything's
virtual console saves get transferred to the Wii. Yes.
Yeah. That's really why I didn't do it because I was very much like, I don't know. I figured all my saves were gone anyways. I don't know. It's very confusing. First off, it didn't tell me the first mistake was that in the message that it gave me, it didn't tell me what to do. It didn't tell me what the problem might be. It just said, can't launch it. Sorry, man. So I was kind of at a loss. Once I figured that out, I had to delete everything one by one. And then I had to download everything one by one. But what made it even sweeter was the fact that as soon as I got done clearing off my SD card, which didn't really take a lot of time, those games actually, they delete really quickly. So it wasn't that big of a deal. The re-download was the real pain in the ass because that took like 2 hours. But the funniest thing was that as soon as I got done clearing off my SD card, I'm like, okay, fine, let's go to the eShop. I get a message on the eShop saying that it's down, and they're doing some sort of maintenance. Now at this point, I didn't know whether or not that was a legit error because it was just random. It was like a random Monday, you know. I mean, it happened to be a holiday in the U.S., but I mean, it was just like, it was Monday between 1 p.m. and 5 p.m. my time. That was actually a block of eShop maintenance. Well, Wii Channel maintenance, to be specific. So, I was like, what the hell? I didn't know if I'd broke something, if my Wii U was screwed up, or I'd done something that had screwed something up, because I'm like, okay, well, what are the chances of me suddenly now, after I've done all this stuff, going to the Wii Shop channel and it's down for maintenance? Well, the chances actually turned out to be 100% because it was down for the next 4 hours. So I couldn't even re-download the games. So I had to wait until like later on that night to actually re-download them all. But yeah, once again, just all that whole tying software to a specific device, it's just brutal. Man, just like, I hope that they do something with that on Switch, and I'm not really necessarily confident that they're going to do that, but because the Switch is a mobile first, well, they're still selling it as a console, but you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the weird thing about Switch right now is that there's no detachable storage. I mean, there is an SD card, but it's embedded in the device. I do wonder, you know, they talk about tying things to accounts, but they also say, it's also come out that it doesn't mean you can have it running on multiple Switches at the same time, which isn't that surprising, to be entirely honest.
No.
But the, hopefully that would be enough. Like, you'll just be able to say, okay, I'm migrating from one device to the next. I want to take my saves with me. I'll just re-download the games. Just do it.
Yep.
Like, that would be the ideal, as it just does it. And they have that built into Wii U. I was able to buy Tank Troopers from my phone at work, and when I got home, it was on my 3DS downloaded.
Yeah,
right.
So, in theory, this should be easy.
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it's just the Wii download process is what makes that really painful. Mario running across the screen and
and it's not just that. Like, you can't queue up downloads, and also every time that you finish downloading something, it brings you back to the home menu of the Wii Shop.
Yes.
So you have to click on titles you've downloaded. You have to get back to the page. Like, you know, if you've got several pages of content that you bought, like, you have to go back to that page. It takes like 5-8 seconds to get to each new page. Mm-hmm. And then you start a download. You've got like 3 or 4 button presses to download the thing.
Yep.
And then you,
Yeah, I mean,
Wii Shop channel, more like Wii Stop channel.
Oh my God, what's going on today?
We're on a roll. But yeah, Guillaume's absolutely right. Just the amount of clicks that it takes, because they don't even do something as easy as saying, would you, having two buttons, a second button that says, would you like to download, you know, one more game and take you straight to your titles list. They force you to go back to the homepage, then click on the titles you have, then go and download. Well, then find it. I had like 8 pages of titles, so I would have to get there, click, click, like to get to page 4, page 5, click. Click, click.
You know what that means? More virtual console games they can sell you one day. Oh yeah. Resell you.
So, I don't know.
I think that maybe it was a small mercy that Nintendo made the Switch not backwards compatible, because then we don't have a painful transfer process to go through.
Yep.
Yeah, so
this is really a really pro-consumer move. Nintendo decided, this backwards compatibility is really more trouble than it's worth for users. So let's ditch that.
Yeah, for once, you're absolutely right. I don't mind it at all. Just give me a better service.
I would argue that anything that gets us further away from Ninja Spirit is a pro-consumer move.
I have that game, too. It was one of the games I had to re-download, so...
I know you do, John, because it was a virtual console.
It was retroactive, guys.
Retroactive, yeah. It was one of the games that we referred to. It was the game that we would pejoratively call China Warrior.
You would pejoratively call it. I don't know why we should be drawn into this.
Because
China Warrior has such a distinctive feature of sprites that are like 50% of the screen. No other game can be conflated with that piece of shit.
I don't know, Ninja Spirit is a piece of shit too.
But it's not got giant sprites. That's the whole point. It's the defining feature.
But yeah, so
thank God for the turbo graphics, because if we didn't have that, about half a retroactive would have never happened.
Forgive me for going back to the start, but did you get some quality Lords of Thunder time in the end?
I did eventually, yes. But by that time, I didn't really play it very long because I was just kind of sick of the whole thing. But I will say it was very sweet getting to re-download gems like Enjoy Your Massage. That was awesome.
Yeah.
That was good.
You're welcome.
That was good stuff.
You're welcome, John.
Yeah, that was good stuff. But
did you enjoying your massage?
I have not. I have not returned to it. I'm going to save that for maybe. I'm going to get maybe a cigar, a glass of port, and maybe really enjoy that one. You know, just me, some port, a cigar, and enjoy your massage, and that's
and the knowledge that the company that makes it's an Italian porn game developer.
Yep, that's a Friday night right there. Just cancel all meetings. I'm taking this one.
All right, sometimes we download good games.
Now, I was sad that I had to get rid of you can no longer download like the Wii Speak channel and all that kind of stuff. Those are the ones I missed.
Yeah, they...
Well, I'm sure you were sad, yeah.
I was pretty sad. Now, I was impressed that I was actually worried that I wouldn't be able to re-download Doc Lewis's Punch-Out. That was one that I wanted.
No, I wanted
to keep in.
We speak.
The old library.
We Speak went away when they got rid of the Wii channel or Wii Online, whatever it's called. Wii Connect.
Wi-Fi connection.
Called. Yeah.
Yeah.
Once that went away, We Speak wouldn't work anymore, so I just delisted it.
It shall be missed.
No, it shall. It's just big me heads dancing around the screen.
Yeah.
God. Yeah. What a nightmare that thing was. So, Guillaume, did you download a good game? Please tell me you downloaded a good game.
Yeah, I actually did. In January, there were a bunch of indie titles on the eShop on sale. So one of the ones that I grabbed is, and this is a title that needs to be explained every time you say it, Noitu Love 2 Devolution. And Noitu Love is evolution backwards. So there.
Speaking of wordplay.
Yeah. So this is a game. It's one of those games that's basically made by one guy. I just got the credits today. And it says game by... Oh, what's his name? Konjac.
Konjac.
Right. But that's not his real name. His real name is something that's not Konjac. Joachim Sandberg. And so it's one of those games that's made by one guy. And that's... really, really freaking impressive, because I've never played the first one. I've looked online. It looks like it was kind of a web browser game that was not all that, that didn't really stand out all that much. But the sequel was actually, an executable. Like it was a little bit bigger, like meatier than a web browser game.
It was a proper release.
Yeah, and except that it came out in 2008, so it was before Steam tried to integrate the Xbox controller in its interface, and it's before a lot of PC games started just assuming that PC gamers had a controller. So it's definitely, like, it's made for keyboard and mouse controls, and the look is incredible. It looks like a freaking Neo Geo game with incredible like colors. You know, it's pixel art, but pixel art
that's an SNK style to it. Definitely,
yeah, pixel art that's really detailed. You know, much much better quality than what you'd find on the Super Nintendo, and with kind of, you know, it has, it just reminds me a lot of the Metal Slug games, with the way that it has sprites that serve no purpose except to be kind of funny looking and just to be there and to populate the various like 2D levels. You know, like you'll have some dude like fishing, and you can't really interact with him, but he's just there in the background, and you know, so you just, and like these absolutely crazy looking like backgrounds with like the cherry blossom trees and like the, you know, like with those pink flowers just flying down in the wind, and I don't know, gigantic bosses that just take up the whole screen. You know, like it reminds me of Metal Slug, and reminds me of what WayForward likes to do, you know, with giant bosses and that kind of pixel art. So I played it on the Wii U. There are several control schemes for it. You can use the gamepad touchscreen, but it didn't sound like that would be all that great. So what I did was I used the nunchuck and pointer controls.
And yeah, because so, that's the thing. This game was originally kind of slated to appear on WiiWare, I think, at some point. But
right.
I think the clock kind of ran out on Wii before that port really happened. But yeah, right. I kind of always I was interested in this back when it was discussed for WiiWare, and yeah, right. You know, I'm big on pointer use games, so it's nice to see that survived, you know, through to this version.
Yeah, and it plays pretty well, but yeah, so like it might look like a Neo Geo game, it might look like, you know, an old school shooter, but it was very much designed with kind of a pointing and clicking interface. So it's a good thing that the Wii U has that. So that's what I used, but the way it works is that basically like you move around with the stick, and to attack you just point at the enemy with a pointer and press A, and your character is going to just fly up to the enemy and start punching. And so that's how you attack most of the time. And another thing that you can do is kind of a dash attack. And there are two ways to do that, one of which I really can't master. So, and that's the way it worked also on the PC, apparently. Like, you just hold down the B button on the Wii Remote, and you swing left or right or up and down. But I find that a little bit too sensitive. I can't get it to work the way I want to. But, you know, apparently that's how it worked on the mouse as well. You held down the right click button, and then left, right, up or down. But so it's good that they added the option to just double tap forward, backwards, up and down to reproduce that dash attack as well. And yeah, there's also kind of a charge shot that I you don't end up using too much, because it just takes too damn long to charge up. But yeah, you've got some sort of projectile attack as well if you want to use that. And pressing B and pointing somewhere in the screen kind of summons some sort of shield that will block projectiles. But during my playthrough in the normal mode, I didn't find that enemies were shooting at me all that much, so I wasn't really using it, except for one level where there's kind of a kind of puzzle, light puzzle sequence where you have to use this function to be able to get across the level. But yeah, it's a hard game to talk about, because it really is like just insane action all the time. You're moving forward through the levels, and there's always enemies appearing, always, constantly, and you just click and you know, point and click and beat them up, and eventually you have to move on, and you're trying to rack up as much of a combo, I guess, as you can, and get to the through the level as fast as you can. With taking as little damage as you can to be able to get you know, a good grade at the end of the level. Usually I scored D's, and so yeah, not a very good first playthrough. The game, you know, if you're not trying to master it, is not all that difficult, I found, which is good, because I'm, you know, I don't necessarily want to have to master every action game that comes up, and it's nice to be able to get through the game and feel pretty adequate at it and just enjoy the explosions, you know. So I really enjoyed it. Really varied levels. There are 7 chapters. The game is over pretty quick, but then, you know, you unlock like a different characters. You can go through the game again. There are various difficulty settings. So if you want to, you know, really master the game, you can butt your head against it, various different ways. And yeah, it's just super impressive. I can't believe that these sprites were, you know, all made by one guy, the music, just like the one guy. And this guy has collaborated with WayForward in the past, and I think it shows. Like, you can see that there's kind of a similar sensibilities, game design sensibilities there.
Yeah, I mean, his calling is art, so you see a lot of his stuff. Like he has a blog where he just posts a lot of it's just fan art of other characters that he's made, or just stuff that he like sketches of his characters. I want to say that Iconoclasts is only out in Greenlight, but it's their next game.
Okay.
Or his next game, I guess is the better way of putting it.
Right.
It has a very similar art sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
It looks neat. It is interesting to look at his website where you can see all the stuff he's made and see how his style has dramatically evolved as time has gone on.
Right.
And he posts some of his thoughts on here too. It's an interesting read. I stumbled across it when I got this game and played it for a little bit and then said, I'll come back to it. Mm-hmm. But now I'm thinking I might need to come back to it. For real.
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't know he had made this many games. I'm looking at the page right now, and most of them are free downloads, so that's pretty cool. But Noi2Love is really like kind of probably a step above, and that's probably why, you know, he felt comfortable charging for it. You know, like most of these I think were made before indie got really big on PC, I suppose.
Yeah.
And before, you know, like these kinds of these 2D action games, pixelated action games were kind of more welcomed, I guess, by gamers.
Yeah, I mean, Noi2Love was about 2012. So even then, that's not super late to the game with that stuff. You figure that's roughly, that really got going around 2006, 2007.
Right, the first Noi2Love was 2008, yeah.
Yeah, which, you know, that's when you're talking about like Xbox indie games is coming along, Xbox Live Arcade's coming out. The Wii U eShop doesn't come around for a little bit after 2008, I think, roughly around 2008. Like that's where you start to see these things pop up more, because A, the PC market becomes more viable, and B, you can also port them to these consoles where they have a natural home. And at some point, the publishers started making these games themselves. You know, that you have things like Mega Man 9, where this sort of retro sensibility comes back into play. But I think to your point, Noi2Love is sort of retro-ly nostalgic for something that most people never really experienced.
Right.
Because you can't look at it and go, oh, that looks like a Super Nintendo game. There's a ton of games that look like Super Nintendo games. I think you're right. I never really made the SNK connection, but yeah, it does kind of look like a Neo Geo arcade game. Like something from the AVS.
I think the inspiration is kind of obvious when you're playing it. Just the way that the enemies like come from everywhere, from the background, from left and right, and like usually there's going to be set pieces with like, okay, like there's a canal behind you, like you're in a park, there's a canal in the background, and then all of a sudden, you know, like there's a speedboat throwing, you know, shooting at you, and you have to hide behind a, you know, series of trees, and so the trees get cut down by the bullets, and you have to move on to the next tree, and you know, like, and it's really fast paced, it's really cool, and it plays kind of unlike anything you've played. Like I feel like if this game had been made for consoles, it would have been some sort of twin stick shooter, which maybe some people would have preferred, but it was designed for keyboard and mouse, and so it's kind of It's weird. It's unlike most things that you've played. It's probably closer to something like Sin and Punishment than, you know, than Metal Slug, actually. And,
yeah, if you were to make a 2D Sin and Punishment.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it's pretty cool that it managed to find a console to land on. The game is also on 3DS. Now, as I said, I've never played with the touchscreen interface. I'm not sure if it works as well. But yeah, it's also on 3DS, but unfortunately, it's not a cross purchase. You don't get it for free when you buy one version, but you do get a 50% discount.
Fair. All right, Greg.
Yes, my new business this week is ruthlessly topical, as it concerns both Zelda and the Virtual Console, which is all on our minds at the moment. I've been playing Link to the Past on new 3DS, the hot new stuff.
Newest business.
Yeah, I believe this is the first time I've ever rebought a Link to the Past. The last time I played through Link to the Past was about 6 years ago. I spoke about it on the show then, but that was the original cart. That was actually running on my Super Famicom, so yeah, this is the first time I've gone digital with it. I didn't buy the GBA version when that came out in the early 2000s and all that kind of stuff. So it's one of those that's obviously it's a classic, it's a personal favourite, but I've not felt the need to rebuy it till now. But what sort of precipitated it was they did over here they had this sale on Zelda stuff, in the run up to Breath of the Wild, I think it was pretty much 30% off everything Zelda in the stores. But there was a botch with how they executed it. So they tried to, it wasn't just like a regular sale, they tried to tie it into a sort of My Nintendo membership drive. So it's like, oh, you know, everything's on sale. That Zelda, as long as you're signed up for a My Nintendo account, right? But the way they executed that was kind of like, those sort of My Nintendo rewards that you might redeem from the website. And so it at first kind of registered it as a one-use-only thing, the way that it would be if it were one of those rewards that you redeem. So some people like bought one game on sale and then found that they couldn't buy another one for the 30% off because their discount had sort of been, their scarce discount had been used up and they got very angry. But that was never Nintendo's actual intent. They just buggered up the execution. But God. They had to move quickly to clear up the fact that was just a failure of the way they set this up, and eventually everything was on sale. And people could keep buying stuff as much as they wanted. I only really wanted a Link to the Past anyway, so it was a moot point for me. But not the greatest advert for my Nintendo.
My favorite part was I think that only impacted Europe. So
this was a Europe sale. Yeah, as far as I know, there was nothing, no analogous program elsewhere.
So, there was this weird stretch of just watching Europeans on the internet get angry, which is always kind of a treat because it's good to see another region get mad at Nintendo for something. And we're just sitting there going like, ah, I'm not even mad today. And then you realize, wait, they got a sale where you didn't fuck. So, Schadenfreude only goes so far.
Yeah, yeah. But I did get a Link to the Past, and first time sort of playing it digitally, first time playing it portably, first time playing it at all in quite a while. It all came back pretty quickly, and in retrospect, it's funny how sort of simplistic certain components of it are relative to my memory of it. I was barely 8 years old when that game came into my possession, and I'd never played a Zelda game before or much like it, with that kind of with puzzle solving or even just the sort of adventurous aspects of it was fairly unfamiliar to me. Most of the NES games we had were very arcadey action stuff. So it seemed like really complex. And then you play a dungeon now, and it's like the item you got was the mitt that can lift up a rock, and at one point you lift up one rock. I mean, it's kind of hilarious how basic some of the early ones are, kind of easing you into the game by comparison. As I said 6 years ago, you know, you kind of remember some of these really big moments of like, oh, of course, you know, with puzzle solving, but they're really not the bread and butter of the dungeons at all in that game, you know, in the way they would become so with the 3D games that retained, you know, so much of the Link to the Past template. So it's kind of understandable why those would blur together in your mind over the decades.
Right.
That they were more alike than they actually were.
It was a lot more kill rooms. And in fact, that kept going up through the 3DS touchscreen games.
Yeah.
Where there were still quite a few kill rooms, although there was touchscreen stuff. I wonder if that was because they weren't confident in combat in a 3D game. Like, they felt like the combat pacing and maybe even people not being comfortable fighting in a 3D game and having to come up with things like Z-targeting made them feel like puzzles made the game feel more approachable.
It's interesting. I think Spirit Tracks has got some really quite advanced puzzle stuff.
It does.
Compared to Link to the Past, my God, there's a gulf there in terms of the advancement in puzzle sort of complexity and sort of brain teaser quality. But yeah, I mean, the thing is, this is something that comes up with Link Between Worlds as well. There's this very fluid kind of component to taking out enemies with the simplicity of the overhead gameplay that means that maybe you feel like you can put them in without bogging down the pacing too much, whereas, you know, the whole point with like Ocarina's combat, you know, it was sort of a little more like Zelda 2. But perhaps more so in terms of, you know, parrying and, you know, kind of a back and forth and defending and then attacking.
An enemy in front of you.
Yeah, you know, so, that definitely kind of changes the nature of the game, I think. And of course, it kind of incrementally kind of got iterated on as the 3D ones piled up over the years. But, you know, there's stuff that would never get into, you know, ladders, you know, even like in quite advanced dungeons in the game, it's just like, well, okay, there's a locked door. How will I get the key to unlock this door? Oh, it's just under a jar.
Which is the shit that I made fun of in A Link Between Worlds. But
A Link Between Worlds is like super advanced in its
Where is the button? Oh, it's under the only thing in the room that's not open tiles. It's, hey, there is the button.
Like, I mean, it's always you kind of, because A Link Between Worlds can seem like it's like, you know, compared to like some of the puzzle aspects of Spirit Tracks and stuff, that could seem quite simple by comparison to something like that or to the 3D games. But, you know, you can also forget how much more advanced it is than A Link to the Past in a puzzle sets until you go back and actually play it. You know, there's a lot more really clever stuff in A Link Between Worlds, especially making, you know, with the whole going into the wall component of the game. I think that was kind of crucial to add something extra to that gameplay, you know, that you know, I probably have a greater appreciation for now, having just played the original recently, than I did when I played A Link Between Worlds 3 years ago. Wasn't it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of interested in going back to that now and seeing, you know, what I make of it. Having, you know, played the source material much closer to it, but we've got a certain issue of a brand new Zelda game coming out, so I don't know whether I'm running out of Zelda prep time here. But yeah, you know, I still enjoyed it. It's because it's you know, a real favourite, and there's still, you know, a lot of a lot to be commended about the game, even if it is seems relatively simple to people who've seen so much Zelda since over the years. And there's something to be said for its sort of breeziness, and it doesn't get bogged down. I mean, I ended up kind of getting absolutely everything in the game, a bit over like 10 hours, and that's probably pretty slow.
Yeah,
because if you really know what you're doing.
It's kind of a throwback to the series' arcade roots, or when all games had more of an arcade element to them, right? Like, there was much
when Nintendo games were more that way, definitely, mm-hmm. But it's, it's kind of a nice antidote to, like, some of the, the sort of excess that's come into Zelda times, but at the same time, it's like, would you necessarily, want the games to be that simple? No, I wouldn't, because I really do like the puzzle solving in the games. So that's kind of it's nice to revisit in a way, because it has got a different flavor, despite most people would say that, A Link to the Past is the template for all the 3D Zeldas to varying extents, which is true, but it's true more structurally in terms of the whole, like, usually there's three dungeons and then there's the Master Sword and then there's another bunch of dungeons and then there's the end of the game. Like, that's, it certainly codified that as the sort of default Zelda structure, but the actual sort of moment-to-moment gameplay, I do feel like changed quite a lot. I have to say, I was really happy with the experience on the 3DS. Playing in the original resolution was nice. This is not a game like Super Metroid that has, like, kind of control weirdness to worry about on the 3DS. It's interesting.
Well, the
actually.
L and R are barely used, right?
They're not used. I don't think at all. I'm not sure if there's some minor functionality somewhere, but I mean, you would think that it would at least be to cycle through items or something. But it isn't, it's funny, really, that we think of earlier games, and this was pretty early, I think 91 in Japan. So it was within the first year of the system coming out over there, as sometimes like crowbarring features in, like blowing in the microphone on DS or whatever. That'll be in an early game, but maybe later on it wouldn't. But then you had things like, L and R weren't used that much in Pilot Wings, and they're not used that much in this. it would have been nice, to be honest, to at least mitigate maybe a little bit of the, because you only have one item button. So, you have to pause and then actually go and select the item that you want to use from a menu. And sometimes there's some sort of, like, there's various hints from characters in the game. And one of them will be sort of like, if you freeze the choo-choo things with the ice wand, which I think is completely optional, you don't need that really in it, and then you hammer them, you're more likely to get magic. But it's like, are you really going to, select the ice wand, freeze the pause, then go to the hammer, then hit them just to get some magic? Probably not. So you feel like they a little bit like Super Metroid. It's like, I'm pretty sure you could have made these controls better, but it's not such an issue in terms of just the experience playing it on 3DS. Because it's just that kind of game, top down, all that kind of stuff, it doesn't suffer. I don't think it's not like uncomfortable or anything. I see you're not using the shoulder button, so it's it functions very smoothly. It looks crisp, really, really nice. Very nice to see it looking so good. And also I feel like the fact that it's funny, because playing it portably, I think is cool, because unlike in the old days where I played it as a kid, I would have sat down and played it for hours and hours on end, which is not going to happen now. But what it does allow you to do is, even with an accumulation of short little sort of stints with it, is still kind of pack a lot of time with it in over a few days, and that helps it a lot more to keep track of what you have done and what you haven't done. Otherwise, I think it would have taken me a lot longer to get all the heart pieces and stuff like that, because you'd be like, have I really explored this bit or not, or, you know, if it got too spread out over time, you know, if it was just limited to me going and playing the Super Famicom like I did 6 years ago, you know, I don't think there's any way I'd be able to kind of eliminate things the way that I did here. So that's why, you know, I do really like the portability factor with this, and why probably, you know, I did sort of go for this as a repurchase, whereas all the other kind of reissues over the years I didn't previously. But it also makes me hope that there's still, you know, a few more new 3DS releases for Super Nintendo games coming, because it's such a nice format for this sort of, you know, an action adventure kind of top down thing like this, or an RPG as well, that I really hope we get, like, in particular Super Mario RPG, I think would be a great pick for this, because it's on Wii U, isn't it? The Super Mario RPG, they managed to re-released it there, but it would be a big, I think it would be a really good fit on this, on the new 3DS, because first of all, the original resolution, as I've said before, like playing DKC2 again seems to do, and also, you know, kind of the pixel density of playing on the smaller model 3DS, I think does a lot of favors for that pre-rendered art style. I don't think the art of Super Mario RPG will ever allow it to look like great, because it's got this off-brand quality to it. You know, they're not quite right, a lot of those pre-rendered
models. It's also got that janky pre-rendered, downgraded to sprite stuff going on.
Oh, yeah, and that's what I mean. I think original resolution and playing it on a small screen will mitigate that a lot, compared to the sort of smeary look that you'll get on a TV, especially today's TVs. So that'll mitigate somewhat. But, you know, just that visual component combined with being able to play it portably. I mean, we did a retroactive on that back in 2009, I think, Super Mario RPG, and I played it when it first came out on Virtual Console in 2008, and I enjoyed it and stuff, but I think it would be a lot more enjoyable in the portable format, and with those with the graphics presented in pretty much, short of having some elaborate setup with, you know, a CRT TV and all this other stuff. Like, that's probably the best it's going to look at this point, is in original resolution on new 3DS. So I hope there's a few games still to come, because in Japan, they did a big sort of dump of Super Famicom games a while ago now, and not a peep since. So you kind of, that's one of the only, is it's funny, John talked about, you know, well, we wouldn't necessarily have expected VC to be there on day one, because, you know, you probably would have heard something before now if it were going to be. And I think, you know, that's you know, pretty much what I was thinking too. The only thing I would have said that kind of pointed in the other direction is that the way that they seem to have seen fit to choke off Virtual Console in Japan almost altogether. Well, meanwhile, we seem to be getting games that even Japan haven't had yet, which is really weird. You know, Harvest Moon just came out in America and Europe, a game that I think Natsume themselves basically expressed skepticism would ever happen, which is really weird. And then we had Ogre Battle just recently as well. Both of those aren't on the Japanese N64 portion of the Wii U VC. So that's pretty odd. Although, I mean, broadly speaking, they have like 200 more games than us. Like, we're never going to catch up. But it's nice that, at least in the case of a system that was more popular in the West, that they're actually giving us a more, like, Excitebike as another example of a game that we have that they don't.
I would play so much ActRaiser portably. You know,
yeah, great pick. I would love that.
Yeah.
If you had said ActRaiser 2, I would have ended this call.
Well, no, I'm not nuts.
Like, that's a pretty high margin.
I would like ActRaiser 2 to be available digitally, just because it's so expensive. I would like to try it. I've not got great expectations, but I'm sure as hell not going to pay the prices that are out there on the eBay market for that game.
I don't want anybody responsible for ActRaiser 2 to make money on ActRaiser 2. I want that to be their funnily, continued...
A, funnily enough, I saw an auction for ActRaiser 2 on eBay the other day, and it was just like ActRaiser 2 by Yuzo Koshiro. That was the way it was.
Wow.
You know, it has got a good soundtrack, so. You know,
it does have a good soundtrack.
You could go there.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for new business this week. When we come back, it'll be time for listener mail. Stay tuned. We're back. It's listener mail. The inbox to send us questions is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You can ask us about Switch, which by the time you are, well, by the time you are hearing this, you have a very limited amount of time to email us about Switch, and by that I mean like minutes, because roughly when we finish this segment, it will be out next episode. But you can email us your questions, comments, or, you know, end music suggestions or retroactive suggestions, which by the way, there's a plug for both those things coming in a little bit, to that email address, like these fine people did. That would be me for the first email. Ben writes, "Hey guys, is the lack of VC on Switch at launch a concern? I don't think so. I can't even remember what VC games are available on the Wii U at launch, and the 3DS did not even have an eShop to start off with. Nintendo have, quote, kind of announced, quote, or announced a few, quote, new / original titles for the eShop, and I'd rather play World of Goo or I Am Setsuna for the first time, rather than Super Mario Brothers again, or classics like Wrecking Crew or Pinball. Do people really care that the VC is there exactly on day one? What difference does it make for the eShop? Just while I'm on the VC, I'm interested in playing Ogre Battle 64 on Wii U, but I have never played it before, and off-TV play is very handy. But I don't know if this is a good example of the game. Is the emulation all right? I assume James will have some opinion."
First off,
I haven't bought it on Wii U yet. Here's the thing about Ogre Battle. Every emulation of it sucks. It's one of those N64 games where emulating it is weird and there's problems every time. I'm sure it's passable. I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah, well, but in general, the N64 emulation on the Wii U has been worse than on the Wii. Like, it's just it's usually much darker.
Yeah, bit dim looking. Although, as I've said before, this is not important to Ogre Battle, but there are games where the performance is better, you know, like, so, whereas with Wii N64 games, it seems like they wouldn't let them run better, even though they could.
Right.
With the Wii U, it's less accurate, but, you know, certainly Mario 64 runs smoother. Turbo Hearted Sin and Punishment is, like, kind of playable, whereas originally it was kind of headache-inducing with the frame skip on.
Yeah, I would say that, like, all I've seen are screenshots, which isn't a great representative. But to Greg's point, it probably is a little darker. Greg and Guillaume. But I would probably still recommend it over going into Wii. I mean, you could run Wii mode on the gamepad and play it that way. I wouldn't recommend it because you have to hold it. Well, you actually would be able to use a controller for the gamepad for that game. But you know, it's probably worth getting for save states, and stuff like that. Not that you super need them for Ogre Battle 64, but having them wouldn't be so bad. There have been times where I thought to myself, oh, that was a boneheaded mistake. Oh, well. But also the ability to just stop playing for a little while and come back to it. It does have a suspend feature in the game, but this is certainly a hell of a lot faster.
Yeah, because that's the thing about it. With N64 games on Wii didn't have suspend, right?
They did not, no. You had to proper save those games.
Yeah, that was actually one of the formats that I think Neo Geo also didn't have it.
Correct.
Whereas NES, Super NES, and TurboGrafx did, and Genesis.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably fine, but, you know, it is what it is. But to the main question, so Greg, why can't he remember what was on the Wii U Virtual Console at launch?
Because there wasn't one. With 3DS, it's easier to remember because the eShop didn't turn up till...
The eShop launched during E3.
E3, yeah, and then Virtual Console was there at the launch of the eShop, in that summer. You had Super Mario Land, and Link's Awakening, I think,
it wasn't there at the launch of the Wii, was it, either? It came well after...
The Wii, the original Wii, did have Virtual Console at launch. No, it did. It did.
It did? Okay.
Yeah. It did. That was the only thing it had.
Yeah, Wii had Virtual Console right there at the start.
Yeah, so the Wii launched with about 22 Virtual Console games in North America. Most of them were for the NES. Then it kind of went quiet, and we got to the drip feed almost immediately, like one a week.
No, I don't. I mean, you know, it took its time to get to one a week. I mean, it kind of, you know, there was the sort of times where, you know, two a week, I feel like it kind of got down to, and then one, and then we were kind of really, yeah, heralded the end of the kind of the days of the sort of primacy of the Virtual Console on Wii. But that wasn't until 2008. So yeah, you had a couple of years there where you had pretty decent. So in retrospect, it seems better because they've been so much slower since.
Yeah. 06 was rough. 06, there was a bunch at the start, and then it was one game a week, and then 07.
Yeah,
got
but
better.
Like I said, you know, compared to subsequent platforms, that's great because subsequent
really?
Platforms, including Switch, is just not there. In the first few couple of months or more, we don't know how long it'll be. In terms of how relevant it is, I would say, for my purposes, one thing, I'm certainly not concerned about the absence of those sorts of games. We kind of talk about the sort of typical VC starter fare, because, you've got the issue... I've talked about how much I like playing these games portably, and I think Switch will be a great way to do that eventually. But you know, at launch, the way things are now, you haven't got an actual way of playing it sort of in portable mode with a D-pad yet. I mean, yes, we have the Pro Controller, but that's kind of a tabletop mode thing. Which is well and good, but it's not necessarily as convenient.
Yeah, probably don't want to do that on the bus, like set up the little stand on your knees and then like, oh, the we
yeah.
took a
and
bump
and then let me just pull out
screens
the,
on the floor.
Let me pull out the Pro Controller on the bus
right.
as well. You know, so like I said, that absence of a legit D-pad, you know, does not make me eager to see the NES games, Super NES games on that device just yet anyway. I mean, that's one of the things. It's nice that they're getting Shovel Knight early, with the Spectre Knight campaign is coming
right.
to Switch exclusively for a little bit on launch and stuff. But, you know, for me, you know, I would like to play that portably, you know, rather than just sort of, you know, be committed to the TV. But then, you know, you'd have the problem of the D-pad situation, and Pro Controllers are damn expensive for on this.
Yeah,
they?
And you're still connected to the TV then too.
And then you've got the TV or tabletop mode problem. So yeah, all of this kind of stuff is just like, yeah, you know, I could probably wait until they presumably inevitably release a Joy-Con that has a D-pad on it, to be honest,
right.
for that kind of stuff. Now, the interesting part would have been the GameCube component of this. Yeah, that was a big part of a lot of the reporting and rumours back when, you know, we were in the Siren era of NX speculation.
That's
and
an
all
easy
that
era
kind of
now.
Yeah.
We do not currently know what the NX is. We do not currently know what the NX is.
It felt like an era at the time where it didn't go on for that long. But, you know, I mean, the point is, had we been talking about GameCube games coming, you know, like early and stuff like that, then I would have been fine to play those. So, you know, you talk about analog-driven games. You know, the sure. Joy-Con as they are in portable mode would function just fine. So that's kind of, okay, if I'm impatient for anything, it's really just sort of information, number one, about, you know, okay, it's not here now. Okay, that's fine. But you know, when is it coming? What's the pricing structure? What's the situation with like upgrade fees or, you know, what credit, if any, do I get for purchasing this stuff before, considering obviously you can, you know, the purchase history is there in your Nintendo account if it's been linked to your NNID from back on Wii U, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, that information is more kind of important to me to find out than when exactly we're going to play the games. But then the second part would be, yeah, you know, stuff like GameCube that we haven't had before and that fits the current setup of the system rather than just the legacy sort of stuff that we've had plenty of times.
Right, like a new system would be a big deal because, as Ben writes, like, do we really care to play Super Mario Brothers again? Like, I mean, like, we already, like, if you want to play Super Mario 3, there's a perfectly good 3DS version, I hear.
What if I want to play original Mario Bros?
Yeah,
where is very my perfectly well good version to, of that?
It's very well suited to Switch as well, with the, you know, that game design with the two player and all that. I mean,
oh yeah, no, it is. No, that sounds that, yeah. The
don't
Switch,
say it sounds good because it's still Mario Bros.
No, exactly. But I mean, I like the idea of so many co-op games on the Switch, even if it's Mario Bros.
Would surprise me if they went back to that well again. You know, it's for Switch.
Yeah, release the advanced versions or whatever. Like the release them a sixth time or something.
What if they released pinball? Because I think that is we're waiting for the definitive version of NES pinball.
Pinball is pretty great. But there is, like, I think a hack if you play it, you know, a ROM version on your PC, there is a hack to make the Princess Waluigi. So I don't even want to hear about the original pinball version.
Basically, yeah,
again.
The definitive version would never be available on any virtual consoles.
No. But yeah, no, it's like, so several points, like Greg spoke for a bit there. I should have taken notes, but yeah, like, so the whole the VC is not there at launch thing is not so much a problem if you don't buy the console at launch. So
yep.
That would be, you know, like, I was a late adopter for the Wii. Well, what?
If,
like, I mean,
if you don't buy a car, it can't break down, right?
Well, exactly. True. It's actually good advice.
Think about your gas bill if you don't buy the car. Think about how much you save on gas.
Absolutely. So I bike everywhere. But anyway.
But you have to buy food to power your legs, Guillaume.
Go to Treehugger.
Imagine how much you could save if you didn't eat.
Anyway. So yeah. So, you know, like, I didn't buy a Wii when it came out. I waited a few months. And then, like, the slow drip release on the virtual console was not a problem because there was already kind of a wealth of games to choose from. And then I was satisfied with what was coming in week after week because there was always something to dip back into. I'm sure that the it's going to be a much slower drip feed on the Switch than it was on the Wii, but, you know, just wait a few months if you're worried about it. Anyway, we know that it's not going to be there at launch. So if it was a purchasing argument for you, then cancel your pre-order. But I do agree that there's, like, kind of, I don't know, like the launch lineup or the, what do they call it? The launch area?
Window.
No, launch zone. Window. The launch window lineup is kind of sounding better and better, you know, with games like Snake Pass looks really cool. Like this kind of weird looking platformer where you're playing as a snake and it's got very, very rare-ish visuals. You've got Shovel Knight and you've got, I don't know, like the lineup is kind of getting shorn up more and more with indie titles or mid-sized studio titles. And
yeah, supposedly it's going to be.
We don't hear too much about AAAs, but
they announced at the same time as this sort of release on you know, confirming that Virtual Console's not going to make it to launch, that there's going to be a showcase for indie stuff on the day before it comes out. Presumably that's just going to kind of collect up a lot of the stuff we already know about, but maybe there'll be, you know, some additional things as well.
Like, we may not get, F-Zero X or GX on day one, but we are getting Fast or MX on day one. Like, it's,
enhanced,
it's a substitution.
Enhanced version of Fast.
Right. So, you know, you take what you can.
You take what they'll give you, and you like it.
Yeah, like a true Nintendo fan.
I think the biggest thing that people might be looking for is just some clarity on these issues. You know, we've had this, you know, the chat that James alluded to earlier about where they've sort of not really been very definitive, but suggested, oh, you know, if you had multiple switches, you're not going to be able to just have sign in with your account on a second switch and install a game again
right.
the way you can, like with Xbox or PlayStation. There's that, but other than that, you know, in terms of the this whole business about upgrades or purchases and all that kind of stuff, I feel like that might be where some of the anxiety is coming from about this, and that's probably where it would have been, if the service was coming day one, then we could have had those anxieties either allayed or confirmed sooner.
Right. Don't worry, we get to hold on to them.
Switch
Online is running like a fine-tuned machine. Just don't worry about it.
God damn it. I thought you were setting up another pun. It's been like 40 minutes since we had one. Well, I mean,
the chapter hour for this has to be like the "This is fine, dog." Basically,
yes.
I mean, you mentioned that we know going back to the good old days of Switch speculation, but think of it this way: we get to keep going forever. It fuels the show. As long as Nintendo refuses to tell us basic facts, we can continue to make episodes of this show.
Yeah.
And you can continue to email us. Like,
"Hey," Einstein writes, "Dear RFN crew, after 175 hours, I finally finished Dragon Quest VII yesterday, including the first bonus dungeon that required three times, the second bonus dungeon, and the brief story DLC chapters. I still haven't mastered all of the monster vocations or played more than 3 of the 47 DLC dungeons, and my character is only level 50. But I decided I had to stop somewhere. It is easily my favorite 3DS game, and one of my all-time favorites in spite of any pacing issues and being my first ever DQ experience. So I was deeply saddened by Guy and Greg recently announcing their abandonment of it during your top 5 episode. I was looking at my backlog for what to play next and was surprised to find how many unplayed games I have that James Jones has talked about in recent years. Dear James, would you be so kind as to handpick my next game? And would any other listeners care to play along with me? The selection is Ace Attorney Trilogy, Professor Layton, games 1-5, Inazuma 11, Little Battle Experience, Little Battlers? Is that right?
Yep, Little Battlers.
Little Battlers Experience. Yeah, he has LBX here, and I'm pretty sure it's Little Battlers. Okay. Infinite Space, yes. Disaster Day of Crisis, and Red Steel. Many thanks and kind regards.
What is this list?
Yeah, what
just
is this
to
list?
I just want to say that I did not quit the DQ7. I was literally...
DQ7 quit me.
No, I literally couldn't play it anymore because I was without a 3DS for a while. But now I'm back into it, and I'm still playing it. I'm near the end, and I'm probably not gonna finish the bonus dungeons 3 times or whatever. That sounds insane. I'm sorry.
47 DLC chapters.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
But, no, I've not been back to it yet, but I'm not ruling that out at all. I'd be quite happy to go back to it.
Anyway, so now back to this weird like James is a tastemaker kind of list, like.
I mean, there is level 5 all over this list. You're going to be...
There's only one pick
honestly,
here, James. There's only one pick here.
There's one terrible pick here, yes. Honestly, I'm surprised there's not some Yo-Kai watches in this list at this point. Like, it's just... It's a level 5 experience. What I really want to know is why Hey Einstein has the first 5
But he hasn't played any of them.
Leighton games, but he hasn't played any of them. He's only missing one at this point. You may as well just go get it.
I'm impressed. I like his style.
I would say you can knock out the first Ace Attorney game in a few nights if you really give it. When I played Ace...
I know I finished the first Professor Layton in a weekend.
Trust me. I know all about finishing Professor Layton games in a weekend.
What's that lovely expression? Poop sock. Yes, when it comes to Professor Layton.
A lot of these games are games you can knock out pretty quick. LBX, Inazuma 11 are not. They take time. Disaster is a fucking piece of work. Like, that's the only way to describe Disaster. It's a fucking piece of work. Is it a good game? Oh, God, no.
I think with Disaster, it's like, well, it's not a lot of booze, but the alcohol content is so high,
yeah,
you might not want to drink it all at once.
It's a Golden Globus film, yeah, really. I mean,
it's Golden Globus is more 80s. This is so 90s.
You're right.
I mean, it's The Rock. It's Hard Rain. It's all of that stuff. It just every 90s disaster movie you could think of.
My
for some reason,
moment,
10 years later, gets rolled into this game by the creators of Xenoblade.
My favorite moment in this game is, well, there's the part where the fire tornado is a thing.
Gameplay in that bit where you're wandering around the park is dire. Absolutely. You think fire tornado sounds exciting, right? It's about as exciting.
You just walk around the park and talk to people.
It's terrible.
The bridge falling apart is awful because the camera's pointed the wrong way. But to me, it's the final boss battle where a mech just pops out of nowhere. And like, I don't know, we felt like we needed this here. And so Ray shoots at a mech with a handgun.
These are all spoilers,
for like an
guys.
Hour.
He doesn't need that. He doesn't need that because it's obviously going to be the experience he's going to choose.
And somehow we've managed to recount all these things about Disaster and not mention the bear yet. So I mean,
the bear is amazing. The bear scene's amazing. Everything about this game is amazing except
it's
the gameplay.
It's way before,
which is...
you know, DiCaprio was trying to make it cool with The Revenant. Disaster officially better. I can't even get a sentence out.
Like, let's be clear. Disaster is a bad game, but it is really just the depths of the idiocy.
Why isn't that available digitally?
I know.
Because Nintendo of America refuses to acknowledge it exists.
I just love that Reggie at some point said it was a bad game and cut flack for it. Cut flack for actually telling the truth at some point.
First off, we are spending a lot of time talking about what is inarguably the worst game on this list.
Yeah, I think, but I mean, it's also the de facto answer, isn't it? I mean, we've made our choice.
I mean, Red Steel's bad. Red Steel is bad. It's a bad game. The swordplay in it is garbage, and if you've played anything more recently, had swordplay with motion controls, it's going to feel
I'm wondering, did he already play Red Steel 2 or something? Because, you know, if you...
I mean, these are just the games he owns.
Yeah.
Red Steel 2 is not really, like, it's kind of an interesting curiosity, but it's very repetitive, and it definitely is better than the first one from... I've actually never played the first one.
It's an okay game. Less than that game, though. Like, that's the thing that immediately jumps out at you, is that this game is much more kind of a rally game than the first Red Steel.
Yeah, it's kind of like a beat 'em up.
It is.
Yeah,
a first person beat 'em up. Yeah, with QTE ish motions a little bit.
And gunplay obviously is involved, but yeah, the first one, from what I gathered, was more of a sort of
it was a typical FPS.
It was a shooter where you could tilt the Wii remote on its side, and you would tilt the gun in the game, just like in a John Woo movie.
Yes.
John Woo is another important name to mention about the 90s.
Yeah, occasionally that shooter would stop and you'd play a sword minigame. I mean, that's what Red Steel is. LBX is the worst of those level 5 games I've played. I mean, it is one of those games. I found the actual robot combat to be kind of poor. I mean, it's fine, it's okay, but that's the best praise I can give it. Inazuma 11 has this sort of secondary darker situation where kids are shooting dragons at each other. And adults are getting way too into it. Like, so you have that whole, like, adults being way too into their kids' sports thing. Only in this case, their kids' sports are literally shooting fireballs at one another. So there's kind of a dark subtext to that game that I appreciate. But it actually plays pretty well. But yeah.
So, like, only now are we getting to the good games on the list? Ace Attorney Professor Layden?
No, Inazuma 11 is a good game. Infinite Space is a good game. Yeah. I don't know that I can ever recommend someone play Infinite Space. Like, you've got to be in it, because that game will fuck with you constantly. And what pisses me off about that game more than anything else is there's three types of combat, and two of them are tactical to some degree, and then one of them is literally rock, paper, scissors, and if you screw up, you lose. And it's game over. And that's fucked.
So in short, Einstein should be playing Professor Layden.
I was actually going to go with Ace Attorney 1, to be fair. I think that game is a good, like, hey, I want to get back into playing some of these games. I think that one's a good start because it's fairly passive game. You could just sit, you could watch TV and play it.
The same thing with Professor Layden.
But that one's actually got more puzzly stuff to deal with. I mean, this is really just an adventure game. You just click through and you do stuff. I actually like the first Ace Attorney game a lot more than the first Professor Layton game. And I love Professor Layton series. I just think that first Ace Attorney ends on such a ride that it's really cool. The case they added is in the 1, 2, 3 or collection trilogy or whatever. The one they added in the DS game. Right. It's like half the length of the rest of the game. It's a real trip of a case. I would say, actually, you'd be better off kind of like working them as alternates. You know, play an Ace Attorney game, play a Layton game, and then go play one of these other ones, and then come back and run another Ace Attorney and Layton game.
Sure. At what point do you go for the versus game in that sequence?
Versus is weird. So you need to get through at least the first three Ace Attorney games. And then the first, well, Ace Attorney, really, you can do it after.
If Einstein hasn't bought the Versus game, I would say keep not buying it. to be honest,
I actually really like it.
It's so fucking slow, though. Like, if you've played three Ace Attorney games, and you know, like, you know already how to play that game, but unfortunately, the first six chapters are all kind of treating you as if you didn't know.
I think the trials in those games are much better than the professor sequences, because they do some different stuff in the trials.
Yeah, sure. The professor sequences are a lot of the game, at least initially.
Sure, because
they're really painful.
They basically replaced the storytelling sequences of a Professor Layton game with the trials. And that's basically the game you ended up with. Or vice versa. They replaced the investigation portions of an Ace Attorney game with Professor Layton gameplay. You could play that around.
How about he plays it after his 13 games that he listed?
Nope. I suggest start with it when you don't have any affection for these characters at all. Then go get Project Cross Zone, because that's really going to get you involved.
Get your 8... You know, Professor Layden, Ace Attorney games under your belt first, and then decide if you want to spend more time with these characters.
By the way, considering Project Cross Zone managed to get some monolith characters in it, where the hell was Ray?
That's true. Yeah, you know really? What?
If Ray belongs in anything, it's Project Cross Zone.
Oh,
sure.
He would have been so good in that stupid game, too, because that game is so much about these characters are idiots. Mm-hmm. He'd have been great. I would have loved to have seen him talking with characters from Tekken. I think that would have been amazing. Oh, God. Now all I can think about is what could have been. All right, let's go on to the next email while I think about Ray talking to the robot assassin from Tekken for the next 20 minutes.
With pleasure. Chris from Middlesbrough, UK, says, "Gents, I've recently been making use of a rarely discussed and not very well-known feature of the Wii U, the ability to play Wii games on the gamepad alone utilizing the built-in sensor bar. By standing the gamepad in its charging dock and pointing the Wii remote directly at it, I was able to put a few good hours into Metroid Prime 3 while the missus used the TV. I think this is an awesome feature, which has gone unnoticed by the gaming community at large, given the Wii U's poor sales. And my question is this. What feature or function of a gaming console, past or present, do you think deserves way more credit than it actually got or that it actually gets? Until next time, cheers, lads. Eh.
Yes, it is a fun sort of feature that it's got. It's nice that it has it, but, you know, it's funny, really, because Wii U gamepad doesn't have a kickstand. I probably ended up using it a lot less than if it had one like Switch. I mean, you could get, like, the it didn't have to be necessarily the charges, though. Like, there's at least in the black Wii U that they had early on, you know, the premium one, you had, like, a little plastic stand that you could put it in.
Just
to stand it up, but again, it's just the convenience is not there the same way as having that built-in kickstand.
There's a few times when I did try to use that little stand thing to bring the gamepad to the kitchen, which is right next to my living room, but like I was trying to like do the dishes while watching Netflix or something, and the range was not good enough, and I was just like, really? Are you kidding me? Like, there's literally, like, the kitchen and the living room could be the same freaking, like, there's no door here. Like, what are you doing, gamepad?
I mean,
so that was disappointing.
Its range is 10 feet, maybe. Less than that, probably.
It goes back to the tech that's in that thing, and it's very susceptible to interference. When I was in the apartment, it was a disaster, even sitting in front of it.
Yeah, trying to go through walls, forget
so
it.
I've got high hopes for Netflix on Switch. Oh.
Again, I mean, you know, it hasn't got an internet browser at launch, but it's not got a lot of things at launch. I mean,
yeah.
I would expect the internet browser is actually a security thing to prevent it being used as a vector to jailbreak the system.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that will come eventually to this system.
Yeah, well, for a while, I thought that the Wii internet browser was like the most useful thing in the world. Like, I would actually like turn on my Wii in the morning and check the weather and you know, like,
you'd use the weather channel. God,
I know, because the
I did. I used the weather channel.
I don't know, websites were more accurate to me, but yeah, like,
but
I,
not
I,
animated.
Sure. I'm sorry, I can't speak about the Weather Channel. I've never really used it.
You lay off the Weather Channel.
No, I use the Wii browser a lot because, you know, like, it was back before I had the... Or did the Wii come out, and were there even iPhones back then at all?
The first iPhone was announced right around about the time the Wii came out,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right. iPhone so, came out, yeah, I think, no in 2007. iPhone, and my computer took forever to boot up, and yeah, so... I think that the Wii internet was like one of the it was an underrated feature. I can remember
checking the Smash Brothers Brawl website with that a lot, you know, with the daily updates, just like if you just didn't want to spend a lot of time of getting the computer started or whatever. Just like, oh,
green
let's just,
shells!
Let's just see
green
what...
shells are coming to Smash
yeah,
Bros. Brawl.
Let's see what nonsense Sakurai's posting overnight.
Hey, do you like bumpers? We got bumpers in this game. I know the tournament fans love bumpers. Look out, bumpers are bumpy. Yeah, the fucking Smash Dojo was amazing.
I'm trying to think. Are bumpers in Brawl?
Yeah, they are.
I'm trying to remember. Didn't they go away and come back for some reason? But maybe I'm thinking of another.
I don't know. I just remember that, and I've talked about it on the show, that website was almost certainly trolling. But I definitely used it as trolling, because I would immediately go to the Smash boards, which was a tournament scene, and just post every item that I knew would infuriate them as soon as he went live with it. I just watched them get mad about it. It was amazing. I loved it.
Oh, that's right. I think they go away in Melee, I think, and then came back in Brawl. So yeah, it was a big deal, James. I think you're underplaying the significance of the Bumpy Bumpersons coming back.
I've had a bad case of the Bumpy Bumpersons recently. It's fine. is just saying Pokemon Mini existing is kind of an amazing feature. Because it is kind of amazing that that thing exists at all. If not, I'm actually going to go with the, I'm trying to remember what that model of Game & Watch was called. But there were the Game & Watches that had the pop-up screen. I'm trying to best how to describe it. It almost caused the picture to have more dimensionality to it, but not really 3D. Because it was being reflected back up at it. But yeah, I don't know. It's hard for me to think about features that are used by people who didn't like actual dedicated consoles, because I almost always kind of am sort of the base use case for these things. I've got a million devices in my house, and I don't really tend to stretch what they're used for.
Well, one feature I'll miss on the Switch is the activity tracker, because that's how I would basically build my top five list, for this podcast at the end of the year. Like, oh yeah, what did I play? And then I just flip through the pages.
I'm sure John agrees.
I did the same thing. I mean, religiously. let me tell you. Religiously. I was in that thing all the time. In fact, it was my most played game 1 year, but I digress.
Could it be a similar thing rolled into the parental controls app?
The smartphone app.
Yeah. Just set up parental controls for yourself, and it's fine. For your inner child.
I would say we speak, but...
That's not built in the system. You had to buy that.
Well, true. Yeah, but I mean, it was a function of a gaming console, so.
All right, that's fair. It was the panorama screen, the panorama line were the Game & Watches I was thinking about. But again, that doesn't really answer the question, because if you had that, you obviously knew it because you had to pop the screen up to see it. I don't know. This is weird. This is one of those ones I don't have a good answer for.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it would probably be, I have gotten a lot of shit for this in the past, but I always enjoyed on Wii. I really enjoyed the voting channel. It was so stupid. But
everybody votes, John.
Everybody
please.
Votes. I actually really enjoyed that, and I did it all
If only
the time.
That were true.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, yeah. How ironic is it now? Man.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of some of the utopian societies that have reported 100% voter participation.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, bring back everybody votes. The world needs it. The U.S. needs it now more than ever. But, yeah, I always enjoyed it.
I need to know, John.
Pineapple and pizza is contentious these days, I hear.
Yeah. That is like a question off that channel, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's the thing. It was more ahead of its time than you think. And honestly, like, you
red,
know, when I look
red
at...
Red sauce versus white sauce. Go.
When I look at when I look at Miiverse and the stupidity that it engendered, I mean, everybody votes...
Imagine if there was Miiverse for Everybody Votes. Yeah, Everybody Votes was kind of amazing, actually. It was terrible.
It was silly, it was terrible, but it was silly enough. The thing is, it was silly, but it didn't take up too much of your time. So it was, it didn't have any impact. It was just silly. You could do it. And it was always curious, kind of like having that sort of crowdsourced. Whether or not it was real or not, I couldn't even tell you. But, because there were times when it was just, something.
Are you saying it's fixed?
Something. Hey, I don't know, man. I don't know. But sometimes something would win.
Everybody named.
Something would win like 51-49. And I would be like, really? Is this that? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I had my doubts. Maybe you might call me an Everybody Votes conspiracy theorist. But. Sometimes I just wondered if the fix,
everybody's conspiracy.
I wondered if the fix was in. I don't know, but you know, if, I'll miss it.
John,
mm-hmm.
I want to thank you for taking this down the Jesse Ventura well.
Yeah. Not oh one God. Of the good ones either. Not like Running Man or Predator.
the everybody votes conspiracy theory one, right? Yep.
Oh God. All right. Next email.
Okay. Brendan writes, hey y'all, I've got a question for Greg, though I'd be happy to hear others' answers. After many years of listening, I still have a copy of King of Clubs signed by James Jones from back when he played for the Packers. I've come to know that I very much agree with Greg's approach / opinions on games. I'm often nodding along with his criticism / praise. But listening to his new business a couple of weeks back, it occurred to me that I don't really play many of the games he recommends because they tend to be on the more challenging side. I don't really have a ton of patience for the hardest platformers or shooters, so wondering what are some of Greg's or anyone else's favourite games that are engaging for a busy adult without making you bang your head against the wall. Thanks for making one of my favourite podcasts for all these years. P.S. I never actually bought a Wii U, so I presumably we can hold any such suggestions from that platform.
Yeah, well, I have a few suggestions, if you don't mind, Greg.
I just read the email. I'm quite happy to take a break.
Yeah, so when I think of a Greg games, I think Treasure usually. So you know, yep. Like there's kind of that they've got a certain aesthetic and. Nuit to Love 2, which I just talked about, I think is pretty good because it's got that you know, kind of relentless action. But I found myself only dying in like chapter 4 or 5 of 7. So you can get, you know, pretty far into the game and you know, without dying. So it's pretty good. And it's on 3DS. And other than that, like there's a few, I think, Virtual Console titles that are perhaps a little bit easier than the usual kind of treasure fare, but that have that aesthetic. Pulse Man, I thought, was pretty lenient. Like I don't know. I remember kind of finishing it pretty quickly, but it's got a certain, you know, it's got a lot of visual tricks, you know, lots of visual genesis tricks. It's got, you know, fast-paced action, and it's finishable. So that would be one of my recommendations. And as far as actual factual treasure games go, Dynamite Heady, I'm sorry. But yeah, I've never actually managed to finish it. Like, I think I died at the last boss, and... then I had to start at the beginning, and I was
guess
okay.
What? Start over. Yeah. That's the part about that kind of makes me eh about it, but there is a stage select, I believe.
I was thinking for Real Treasure Games, I was thinking Mischief Makers. I can't remember. I don't remember that game as being shake, incredibly shake. Difficult. Shake, shake, indeed.
It's not.
Yeah.
Trying to be a little bit less just like, Greg likes treasure games, let's do treasure games. Sin and Punishment. No, I'm just kidding. You know, I was thinking about what platformers are actually a little bit more lenient, but maybe a little bit more actiony, and I'm pretty sure Greg talked about it. I'm just blanking on it now, but Freedom Planet didn't really resonate with me a whole lot because I don't have much nostalgia for that era, but it does play pretty well. All
it and it's got that definitely got a bit of that treasure influence.
Yeah,
the bosses
but it's the but it's approachable stuff. Too. Like it.
Oh yeah,
you can,
yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's basically way down. Imagine if Sonic Games, in addition to having the spin dash, had a button that allowed you to just shoot in one of 8 directions,
and
that's
we're
basically
good.
Yeah, yeah. So and like you can set it to very easy, and the game is indeed very easy.
It is mind numbing. I think I'm good on it. Greg, what would you recommend in the games for Greg category?
Well, actually, one that I talked about pretty recently, I think it could be good in this area. The Steel Empire, like I said, is a shoot-em-up that is not that hard on like the first two difficulty settings. Even the third one's not that hard, but you know, it's still enjoyable. And you know, and you got the fact that it's on 3DS and all that kind of stuff, so you don't have to deal with like it being some sort of, and you could save in between and all that kind of stuff, so you could just try to do it piecemeal. So it hasn't got some of the kind of frictions that might apply to a lot of old school shooters. Talked about Axlay before. Axlay's not easy, but it's not like crazy hard, because it's not you know, Super Nintendo shooters. You couldn't really do the whole like crazy thing, you know, like crazy fast bullets everywhere, because they didn't have the processing power under the hood to pull it off. So Axlay is, you know, like I said, it's got some sort of challenge to it. It's not like it's really more so than Steel Empire from my point of view anyway, but it's, you know, not a game that's just about sort of just, you know, blitzing your senses and banging your head against the wall. Yeah, it's kind of slower paced, bit more thoughtful, bit more about and it's not one hit kill either. You sort of, what happens is you have different sets of weapons that you kind of pick before the level, and each time you take a hit, it takes one set of weapons away. So yeah, there's a bit of strategy there, but also, you know, a bit of a margin for error, a bit of forgiving quality to it. So I think that's got a lot, and you know, it was probably developed by people that ended up becoming Treasure, because it was, you know, it was that era of Konami just before they left and struck out on their own. So it ticks that box too. So it's that's a good choice, I'd say.
Yeah, in terms of shoot 'em ups, one more I would recommend would be for TurboGrafx-16, Blazing Lasers is actually good as well. It's not that difficult. You can get pretty far in it.
No, it's not. No, that's one of the, because that is like kind of like crazy fast, and you're kind of, well, compared to Super Nintendo shooters, and lots going on, but it's easier than, I found it easier than quite some of the other games I've played in that mold. Like, say, Musha Leste, I found quite a bit harder.
Yeah, and you can get really, really overpowered in it too.
Yeah, that's kind of that's kind of the type of game that is. Yeah, where you get on a roll and you've just got this sort of phalanx of guns.
Yeah, I mean, you can get, you know, you have, you know, lightning that shoots out across the entire screen and obliterates everything. So it's fun.
Speaking of games that may have been from people who eventually became Treasure, Daytona Twinbee. From Konami, is a little bit easier, because it's a lot cartoony, but it's definitely a Konami shooter in a lot of ways. That,
yeah, we got the whole sort of cute 'em up subgenre that's kind of an alternative to.
I had Star Parodier on my list just because you can play as a TurboGrafx-16 shooting CDs, you know, and your power ups are Hue cards.
That's cross branding.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's like just the actual sort of parodious games are not that available. You know, there's a collection for PSP, but I mean, I don't think it was ever available on the digital store. So,
I'm trying to think what good brawlers are on the Virtual Console. Like, are there any really good ones out there?
Yeah, I mean, I quite, Final Fight 3 was decent, and probably easier than I remember the first one being, and more interesting, like more moves, more characters, you know, more varied visuals. But I'm not a huge fan of those sorts of games. So I enjoy it once in a while, but they tend to be a little less strong on design than the games I'm most fond of.
Yeah. The Castlevania we played.
Dracula X. Yeah, that's true. I mean, Rondo. Yeah, we talked about this when we did the retroactive. Rondo Blood, the Maria angle. Yeah. That is, we talked about this during the raid, that is kind of parody is just folded into the same game. You know, rather than being a separate game, you know, if you play as Richter, it's like regular Castlevania. And then if you play as Maria, it's easier, silly, cutesy, wacky Castlevania. And it's still really good.
Really good. Yeah.
Oh, it is. It's excellent, yeah.
And
that's a great. That could be a kind of a gateway thing as well, maybe. But if it isn't, it's just fun on its own terms. Just get Maria first. Well, you know, you can't do it instantly. You've got to find her. But you know what I mean. You can't pick her from the actual outset of the game. But you're looking up in a FAQ, and it's early in the game that you can unlock her.
It's very easy to miss her. So just look it up and do it. But yeah, I mean, that makes the game so dramatically easier. But in a way, to Greg's point, it actually makes the game more enjoyable to some extent, because you see this in all the video sequences, which there are in this game, because it's a CD game. You see this little girl basically scolding Dracula because he's not a very nice man. Bear in mind, it's in Japanese, but you kind of get the point anyway. I don't know. Anybody got anything else?
Well, I think we've ticked the cliche boxes, haven't we? Treasures, shoot 'em ups,
I was trying to find something that's not so cliche.
We've really pigeonholed Greg real good.
Yeah, but that is the premise. I'm not going to blame you. That's the premise of the email. I mean,
I would like to be maybe given a suggestion that you might like. I don't know. I mean, we're kind of in a weird place here.
I'm quite happy with all of these. They make perfect sense to me.
Is there one that you would recommend that you would think that people wouldn't be? You would think that people would be surprised that you would be into.
I don't know. You know, I've
sexy really... poker.
King of clubs. How's that?
Enjoy your massage.
I'm not that surprised.
No, I mean, I've broadened my horizons over the years.
You have, and that's not felt
this,
bad about pigeonholing you here.
Muscle
you
march, know, maybe?
If it, so I was literally the only one of us that didn't get that, John, for God's sake.
Well, he's recommending it to you.
There wasn't cross-region gifted, so I quote-unquote missed out. So a way to go over a sore spot, John. Honestly.
Anyway, we're pretty far from the question now.
We are a bit.
But one thing that you might not think of, because James is the designated Takumi super fan here, but I'm a big fan of Ghost Trick.
It's amazing.
So that's probably the best response I could give to John's question, although relevant that is to Brendan's question. But there we go.
That will do it for email this week, and in fact, for the show. You can send us your emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. Remember, next week, the Switch comes out, but we will be recording our retroactive Princess Tomato in the Salad Kingdom. This game is weird.
It is.
It's weird. We got an email describing some stuff you do in this game, and it's weird and haunting. Post your haunting stories in the official thread. You can find them in the show notes. Can't get enough, Percy. Can't get enough of building houses out of the bodies of our fallen friends. But if you get your comments in before we record next Thursday, they may find their way onto the show. It is on the Wii Virtual Console, which we actually talked about a lot this week, but not on the Wii U Virtual Console. And in Europe, you're going to have to figure it out. Sorry. But it's an adventure game of sorts. So, join us?
Yeah.
Please? And on that, Greg.
One thing, but I've got music.
Guillaume.
Yeah.
You have something to plug.
I sure do. I participated in Radio Trivia this week, and the episode should maybe be out before the next RFN comes out. So please look forward to that. That's one of those episodes where I did not choose any of the five games that Mike played. So I'm just playing along, trying to guess.
Did you actually hit any of the soft tosses he threw you this time, though?
Yeah, no, I think I did well. Like, the ones that I missed, because, spoilers, I don't get them all, not by a long shot. But the ones that I don't get, I possibly couldn't be expected to, so...
I think I did well,
and it's a fun episode, so look forward to that.
It was Klax for the Master System, wasn't it? That was the one you missed. In terms of post-Switch plans, we haven't nailed anything down yet on our side, but we may do something post-launch. Keep tabs on our social media pages and on the NWR. That's the Facebook and the Twitter. The Facebook is facebook.com/RadioFreeNintendo, and the Twitter is RFN Podcast. And, of course, TenterWorldReport.com. We'll post stuff there. But again, haven't decided yet, but we don't really have enough time to tease it before we'd have to make that decision. So here is your tease. Greg,
yep.
People can send us end music.
They can.
So what do you have this week?
This week we have a request from Connell, who wanted to hear the end credits theme to The Legend of Zelda, The Wind Waker. In the run up to Breath of the Wild, as you know, basically the last episode that will go out before Breath of the Wild. So yeah, I thought it was a fair request, and gives you a glimpse of just how, well, a reminder of just how much these big new console Zeldas have to live up to. This is one of the most memorable Zelda credits themes, which is a pretty strong crowd, I'd say.
Yeah. All right. Well, bye, everybody.
Later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.